welcome to the Agile Revolution podcast. Renee here. We're at Agile Australia in Sydney, and with me I've got Craig. Welcome, Craig.
Hey, Don Renee.
Awesome. And a special guest, Anders Iverson.
Well done.
I'm not doing the Swedish pronunciation because I'm going to fail about that.
What is the Swedish pronunciation?
I don't even know myself. I would probably say Anders Iverson.
There you go.
From Spotify, so welcome.
Thank you.
So what brings you to Australia at this time of year?
Yeah, so I came here for the Agile Australia conference, and it's been loads of fun. I just did my presentation on autonomy and leadership.
To a extremely packed room.
A very packed room, yeah, that was fun. And we also did a small workshop earlier this week.
What was the workshop on?
On organizational improvement and using design thinking on as a process to ideate around organizational improvement.
Is that something that's used at Spotify quite considerably?
Not a lot, but I've been playing around with it, and it seems to work really well to get loads of people to kind of, in a structured way, brainstorm around any sort of ideation, whether it be how do we design this new feature, or how do we change the culture, or something more.
Okay. So what do you do to currently? Like, what are you trying to evolve from if you're going to evolve to design thinking?
So I'm currently in a new role as an organizational coach, and this is completely new to me and Spotify, so we don't really know what that means. Well, it probably means I'll start looking at things of, like, how do we improve culture, how do we improve our ways of working, how do we go from a strategic understanding and vision for the company down to the squads.
Mm-hmm. What about systemic waste?
Yes, definitely looking at that as well. It'll be a lot of fun to explore what this means and what I'll be doing.
And as I say, just as when you said an organizational coach, that is different to an agile coach who's with the...
Right. I used to be an agile coach. Most of our agile coaches spend a lot of time with the squads, working with two or three squads, really helping them. But they also do a lot of organizational improvement to look at, like, the whole tribe or across tribes. Mm-hmm. Like, how do we do knowledge spreading? How do we get better at certain practices, etc.?
So is the role an experiment inside of Spotify?
Yeah, I guess you could say so. They pretty much ask me of, like, hey, you've been doing some things with this newer part of the organization that we built up, and now we're creating a new... group of tribes here, and could you come and work with them as well? So I think it's mostly an experiment, and we'll see what happens. And so that was actually part of my talk today, and talking about how we experiment constantly with different ways of doing things at Spotify, new roles, but also how do we improve the way our structure works, or how do we structure our teams, how do we become better at collaborating, etc.
And has it been a surprise? I mean, I know you've gone at lengths to say it, and certainly Henrik has come out in his blog in recent times to say we're not calling it a model, and I didn't invent it.
It's a collective,
I guess, has it been a surprise to those, for someone who's been a coach at Spotify, just how much the rest of the community has, you know, come and had a spotlight on the way you do things?
For me it was completely surprising. I remember when me and Henrik wrote the article in 2012. We've done a fair bit of talking then and met companies, and they were like, oh, this is really cool. You seem to be doing a lot of the things we've been talking about in the industry for a really long time, but here's a company that really does it. And so we're like, oh, okay, perhaps we'll share our story a bit more widely. But I don't think we could ever have imagined what sort of effect it would have had, or how widely spread it became.
I must have been on one of those people that did early on talk about it being the Spotify model. Or more the approach than anything else, knowing that Henrik was saying, look, it's what works for us.
It was just a snapshot in time of things that we were doing and thinking about. It is a model for us in the sense of, like, here's how we describe our organization internally. I do get a bit worried when I hear other companies that go, like,
you don't plan on version controlling a model?
No, we're not going to. No. I'm not going to comment on that.
You've got a diagram, so yeah. Yeah. Keep going.
Right.
Should be version controlling your YouTube videos, right?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. That'd be a good idea. No, I think it's great to see. We hear back from a lot of companies that really look at our videos or our article and become inspired and go like, hey, what can we do to become a little bit better or to start changing our reality? So that's really encouraging. I get more worried when I see people on stage going like, I think I went to a conference a year ago when they were like, so we're going to compare three different ways of scaling Agile, and we're going to look at less, the Spotify model and Safe, and compare what's good and bad about them. And so that worries me when people look at what we do and think it's a framework that they can kind of just copy and implement.
But to actually defend some of those people, it's because in part maybe there's a lot of people out there that don't know what those models are and don't know that there are pros and cons potentially associated with those models within organizations and how to implement them against the culture.
Yeah.
So think of it less around picking it or lifting it up to the state of a model and more around education, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think one of the problems, and I think we talked about that today at some of the presentations here, that I think a problem has been perhaps that we've focused on sharing the things that we think works really well, and we haven't mentioned all the challenges we have. So of course we have plenty of challenges, and whatever solution we come up with today is going to be tomorrow's problems. And I think people, we're really trying harder now to emphasize that we actually have problems as well, and it's not all shiny and everything works well and all our squads are like super amazing.
It's a continuous evolution.
Yeah, it's a continuous evolution, and whenever you solve a problem, you just have the next one to solve. So it's, I don't think you're ever done, basically.
So what's your biggest problem these days?
That's a good question. One thing that we're working really hard on is finding ways of creating more alignment across all our teams. I think we started with like when we were something, when we started reaching like 70 teams or something, it started to become really hard at knowing what everyone is working on even. Like you can keep it all in your head to know like, oh, those are all our squads. So I actually think that there's no one at Spotify today that even knows how many squads we have.
Because there's been a growth in the organization quite considerably.
Yeah, we've been growing really fast over the last couple of years. For a few years we were doubling every year. We're not at that crazy growth right now,
but that
which
does
is,
make sense because you were talking about people just moving in and out of squads quite
fluidly. It is very fluid, both between squads but also like splitting two squads, creating a new one, spinning up a new squad because you have an idea, killing off a squad because they're it doesn't make sense anymore. So it is a very constantly changing an organization. And so one of the things we're working on right now is making all that, first of all, visualize all that. Like what teams do we have? What are everyone working on? What are their priorities? And the second thing is, of course, like how do we make conscious decisions on what to prioritize as an organization? And especially when we start wanting to do those larger initiatives, we don't do that very often. But when we do, how do we get 10 or 13, 15 teams to work together closely in building something that's much bigger than just one team can do?
And also imagine you get to a point fairly soon, like a lot of large organizations do that have lots of people working inside of them, that potentially you have the risk of two teams working on the same problem.
Yeah, that's definitely happened. Perhaps not on end-user facing features because it's very apparent who works on what, but definitely on more like core infrastructure or platform things where one team won't know that another team already solved that particular database challenge that they are having or start doing their own test automation frameworks, although someone else has already solved it.
And so is that what you think of when you think of organizational alignment, of having that knowledge about who's moving in what direction and sort of layering that against what the organizational strategy is or the overall strategy?
I think it's really two parts to it. I think so. So part of it is definitely like the strategic intent of like what do we want to do as a company and how do we align around those goals and that vision. That's definitely one part of it. The other part is like sharing knowledge and sharing best practices and just keeping everyone updated on like here's currently what we think is the best way of developing services or how to scale effectively, for example.
So on a very personal level, I'm quite curious, what's the breakdown, do you think, percentage-wise of you know, on a day in the life of a team, you know, how much are they spending doing work? How much are they spending creating or evolving their work versus how much are they maybe sharing knowledge? And is that ratio where you want it to be?
That's it's a good question, actually. I haven't thought about it. I think it really shifts from over time for any one team. We'll often see that teams go into more like, I shouldn't say crunch mode because that has so many bad implications, but really focus on like, here's a big, hairy, audacious goal that we want to meet right now. And they focus much more on delivery. And once they do that, they might take a step back and see, like, what did we learn? How can we share this with others? What are the things we're doing right now that others can make use of? So often I see teams kind of moving in and out of that mode of perhaps focusing more on delivery and then focusing more on being part of the community and helping others.
Maybe revitalizing themselves in that process too.
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. Yeah, and picking up new things and new ideas from others.
One of the things about, I mean, we're talking a bit about the organization model, but the other thing is the culture, and you talked about this in your talk, the organizational culture, and the videos are out there, they're a fantastic resource if people haven't heard them or seen them. Do you think there's one, being a, I guess being a IT or product company, do you think one kind of outweighs the other? Is does the engineering sometimes start to dictate the organizational design, or does the organizational design, you know, start to have some influence on the
I think we all know about Conway's Law, right? And I definitely think it goes both ways. To be fair, I think this is something that is often overlooked when you talk to companies. They do see, of course, that their product starts reflecting their team structure or their architecture, like their technical decisions start reflecting the organizational structure, and I guess the other way around. What we also have started realizing is that we need to use this to our advantage and really think more properly about, like, what is our way of working, how do we want to work, and what are the technical decisions we need to make that supports this. So for us, it means microservices, really, really small modular services. So any one team will probably have a backend consisting of not just one service, but several services just for that one small squad. Or for example, our desktop client, when we took that kind of big chunk of C++ code and started breaking it apart and turning it into just a web view that that any feature team could upgrade, update. Just their one view without having to coordinate with others. So there are those very strategical technical decisions that we do make in how we platformize the company, in what sort of architecture we choose that allows us to work in the way we want to work. I think it goes.
And I guess things like microservices, you know, if you do really want to take Conway's Law to the extreme, because there is microservices, you're a really good example of, you know, of that, where the fact you've gone a bit radical to some people in the design means it actually has mirrored in certain respect the way you do develop the software, because microservices allows you to do that.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, no, definitely. So I do think it, the culture of like high degrees of autonomy is reflected in architecture, but also I guess the other way around. But this is also a challenge to us, especially if you look at design side, where if you looked at the Spotify client a few years ago, you could pretty much see, like, oh, this view is probably built by a team and this view is built by another team, because they start looking quite different. And so that was a challenge for us of, like, how do we get the teams to, while building their own views or their own features very independently, still adhere to the same sort of design language, the same sort of layouts, the same sort of just look and feel and how you interact with it.
Even what you call buttons as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And also, of course, like, looking at who looks at the overall flows. If we own the artist pages only, who cares about the connection between for a user coming in, wanting to find an artist, so searching for it, then going to the artist and playing it, then perhaps saving it to your library. How do we make that whole journey easier? So that's also something we're looking a lot at, like, how do we make those teams really work together to build a stronger experience?
So do you think we can call the approach that you've taken to Spotify do you align it to being an agile approach, or is it something past that? Because a lot of organisations, like you talk to Facebook or Twitter, and they go, "No, we don't do agile here," but it's got the. Where do you sit on that sort of side of the discussion?
We talk a lot about agile at Spotify. We have our agile coaches, so there is a strong sense of us being agile, doing agile. I do think that even like if you look at top management or top leadership, so our CEO really understands the agile values, and you'll have him on stage for the whole company talking about trust and simplicity. That really matters. So I would definitely call us an agile company. But it's not like we adhere to any one flavor of agile or say like we're just doing Scrum or we're just going to do Kanban or anything else.
So you have an oath of non-allegiance?
Yes, I guess so, yeah.
Sorry, always trying to get the Alistair Coburn reference in there if I can.
Yeah.
It's become a meme now on this book.
Beautiful. No, so yeah, for us it's always looking at like what works, what should we do more of, what do we need to stop or change or yeah, basically how do we keep improving? And of course that is being agile as a company, that's having an agile culture.
So you talked in your in your session this afternoon about Potluck, which is the product owner, team leader, agile coach.
Well done.
as your leadership grouping. Interestingly, I have a similar term, but I actually don't call it Potluck. I call it a leadership cell.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Just because now she's got an acronym.
do you use, because I'm curious, I have like regular... the practices that I apply within squads or tribes, I also apply at that leadership sort of cell level where they might not have the same iteration cadence or sprint length cadence, but generally wider. Do you do similar sorts of things where you sort of treat it like a mega scrum, or how do you?
We don't really do that, and to be honest, the potluck is a pattern that. It started with a few squads doing this, and they like, oh, this is really cool. This is something we should share with the rest of the company, and so it started spreading. I don't know that every squad or has a potluck, so it really depends. And I don't think we've done enough to share this pattern and good ways of working. So some leadership teams, some of those potlucks, really spend a lot of time in talking about what is our goal, what does it mean for us to be effective as a leadership team, how do we help each other become better, how do we support the squad, and really work very, like they'll have their own priorities, their own goals perhaps for the week or for a while.
Do you have like a wall as a group? Do you?
Some of them do. Not everyone. Many of them will have perhaps like a Trello board or something. For some, it's much not that much. For some others, it's just we get together half an hour every week and just talk about like what are we seeing in the squad right now? What's happening? Is there anything new that we need to be aware of or that we should in some way?
Because I found it really quite advantageous in that it reduced the amount of team being pulled in different directions.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I work with leadership teams both on the squad level, but also on the tribe level. That's definitely what I do a lot. Like asking them those questions, like how do you work together? What are your goals right now? What can you do? So really, have them perhaps clarify a bit more to themselves and to the squad, like here's what we're doing right now to support you.
The thing that confused me a little was you've got your product owners in the squads, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have product owners for the tribe, or how do the product owners communicate with each other?
Yeah, so we do have a product owner or a product director on the tribe level as well.
Okay, and
I usually want to see that as just another chapter, so you'd have the product director being the chapter lead, if you will, for the rest of the product owners.
Right.
And so they report into him or her. And they often get together then and talk about perhaps the tribe mission and what are we doing across all our squads. But a lot of it will also be just squads or product owners reaching out directly to each other and say like, hey, we want to do something together, or what about this idea that we should perhaps working on together.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is very informally product owners reaching out and working directly with each other.
Like communicating.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense when you say it like that, right?
On that topic, one question I just wanted to ask, I guess, is a lot of organizations spend a lot of time trying to map out their process and communicate it to, and iterating on this, you know, very fast, the model's changing, but is there a mechanism that you have inside the organization to share those best practices or patterns as you find them? Is it just word of mouth as people walk past down the corridor, or, you know, is there a wall, or is there a wiki or something?
So I think this is something we're becoming better at right now. A few years ago, there wouldn't have been any way, and it would just be word of mouth. We've started doing a lot more internal blogging, where we share a lot of stories of like, hey, here's something we tried, or here's what happened when we did this, or here's a pattern we found that really works for us. I think also we start realizing like the value of storytelling internally. And I mean, if we talk about Henrik, I think this is one of his real strengths, to take something that's very complex and find a way of really distilling it into something that looks simple and obvious, and you can kind of look at it, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense, and find ways of describing it that helps people understand it.
Yeah, this is the dude explain product management 15 minutes on a video.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, and so that's basically what he does at Spotify right now. He helps us a lot at finding those patterns and then telling that story internally, which is super helpful for us. So I think that's one good way of really spreading best practices.
Cool. So what's next for you?
Oh, that's a good question. Tomorrow it's Midsummer's Eve, so I think that's my next big thing. It's celebrating the Swedish Midsummer's Eve here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. So that'll be exciting.
Is there a big Swedish contingent?
That is fairly big, yeah. So we're gonna meet up with a Swedish group and dance around the maypole and drink schnapps
and
have some pickle herring and you know, pretend to be frogs and dance.
Listen, Andrew, around the fall.
Other than that, I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting things happening at Spotify right now.
I mean, it's a challenging market, isn't it? I mean, it's always been a challenging market, but
it definitely is. Yeah, and I mean, it always is, and we of course see some of the big players coming in now, the end bosses perhaps. So that's going to be really exciting. But ultimately, I think there's always new things happening at Spotify. Mm. I'm really keen at exploring new ways or better ways of getting innovation to work. How do we find new ideas? How do we innovate not just within one squad of like, how do we tweak this one thing, but really like, how do we disrupt ourselves as a company? What are the big things that will really change what we are as a company? So I think that's one of the things that I talk with a lot of people about.
And so if people want to chat with you, talk to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Twitter is a really good, just ping me there and then reach out, send me a message there or drop me an email. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
The show notes will have the right spelling.
Yeah. Yeah, so on Twitter it's at Anders_Iverson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to take any questions there or just reach out and say hi and meet up if you're in Stockholm.
Awesome. And if you have any questions for us at the podcast, you can contact Renee at The Agile Revolution or
Craig at TheAgileRevolution.com.
Well, thank you so much for the talk.
Thank you.
And for coming in for podcasting.
Now, we have one thing we've been doing with all the speakers, right? So at the end of the podcast, we sign off and we all say, Viva la Revolution.
There we go.
So we need a really nice Swedish interpretation of that. So on the count of three,
Viva la Revolution.
Thank you.
There we go. Thank you.